will now discuss Agenda Paper 2, which is about the periods of service to which an entity attributes benefit for a particular defined benefit plan. After publishing the tentative agenda decision, the submitter made us aware of an additional condition for an employee to be entitled to the retirement benefit and asked if the additional condition affects the committee's analysis and conclusion. Paragraph 10 summarizes the additional condition. Paragraphs 11 to 21 include our analysis, and paragraph 22 summarizes our conclusion. Based on our analysis, we conclude that the 15-year condition does not change the committee's previous analysis and conclusions regarding the start and end dates for the attribution of benefit. I will now direct your attention to question 1 on page 7 and ask if you agree with our analysis of the effect of the 15-year condition.
Don A.
Hi everybody, I thought I'd kick us off. So I think the first thing that I'd like to indicate is that I am in agreement. I do believe that in paragraph 11, the comment made by the staff that the role of the committee is not to address highly specific fact patterns. So I'm very supportive of the view that was expressed by the staff. And then with respect to paragraph 15 in particular, I'm also very supportive of the fact that irrespective of the number of years of employment that may have been employed previously, you know, it does not reduce the amount of future services the employer will have to render. And then, yes, I do agree with paragraph 22 that I would also conclude that there's a 15-year condition that does not change our previous analysis. But thank you very much for the staff for a very well put together paper and summarizing all those comment letters in a lovely way. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Sophie.
Yes, and the same for me. Compared to the initial pattern, I agree that these additional conditions should not change the pattern of recognition of the obligation. And I believe that these additional conditions of having completed at least 15 years of service make the fact pattern, in fact, closer to the first part of the example of paragraph 73 of the standard, where the condition of service was at least 20 years. And if we follow the treatment illustrated in this part of the example, yes, indeed, there is no obligation to be recognized for employees before the age of 42. And just based on this first part of the example two, I would agree with the staff conclusion.
Thank you, Sophie. Bertrand.
So I don't disagree with the staff analysis and conclusion, but I'm embarrassed by the outcome, and these for various reasons. I think paragraph 70 to 74 are not that clear relating to where we stand in terms of either recognition of an expense or liability or measurement of this liability. And for instance, if I read paragraph 70B, sorry, of IS 19, it states, from the date when further service by the employee will lead to no material amount of further benefits under the plan, other than from further salary increases. So we don't know exactly, I don't think the principles are that clear in terms of recognition or measurement relating to periods of services relating to IS 19. That's the first comment. The second comment is effectively the first part of the example makes rather clear that the conclusion of the staff is probably the relevant one. At the same time, if there was not this example, I'm wondering whether with the principles in paragraph 70 to 74, we might be able to conclude eventually something different. And what bothers me the most probably is the fact that as from the date an employee joins a company, I think the company is committed towards the beneficiaries. And the outcome is quite strange in the sense that we defer, we postpone the recognition of an expense and a liability, whereas the company is effectively committed towards the employee. And that is a very strange outcome. And I'm not sure this outcome is really the one that should that we should have concluded. I hope I've been clear.
Thank you, Bertrand. Brian?
Thank you, Sue, and hello, everyone. I mean, I think I agree with Bertrand, actually, that the principles are unclear. I think when we discussed the previous version of the fact pattern, I found the first part of example two very helpful in terms of it pointing to a single answer for the original version of the fact pattern. And I continue to agree with everything in the agenda paper that discusses the original version of the fact pattern. However, I am concerned about the impact of this additional condition. I think about this condition that seems to operate in a different way to the previous 16-year condition. The previous 16-year condition requires there to be 16 years of consecutive service, whereas with the new 15-year condition, this is a condition that accumulates even if there is a gap in service. If the only conditions were that I had to do 15 years cumulative of service and be there at a specified age, I think I would be in a different place. I think that I would start to attribute the benefit from the first year of service, because each and every year of service would reduce the number of remaining years of service to earn the benefit. So conceptually, I think this condition works in a different way to the condition that we have discussed previously. I think having the two conditions in the same fact pattern, the cumulative condition and the consecutive condition, makes the whole arrangement much more complicated to analyse and also breaks what I've previously thought was a very clear link with the first part of example two. So I actually struggle with the new fact pattern. I struggle with the conclusion in paragraph 22. I'm not sure I have enough basis in the standard in this variant fact pattern to rule out the possibility of attributing benefit from the commencement of employment. So I agree with everything else in the staff paper, but I'm not sure I agree with the conclusion in paragraph 22.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Jens?
I think Carsten is next, right?
Yeah,
thank you. So I personally didn't think the additional condition would change the conclusion, but personally I would be still be in the same place as in the December IFRIC meeting, which is that I continue to think that IS 19 is not entirely clear on how to analyze this specific tech pattern. And so I feel that, you know, issuing the agenda decision as drafted would go potentially beyond the requirements in IS 19. I think clearly the proposed agenda decision would not be in line with how people have looked at this in practice. In fact, I understand essentially no one would have applied that view so far. And I think the resulting backloading of expenses would push entities to an accounting that would not necessarily provide useful information and possibly encourage restructuring. Now, while this by itself should, of course, not drive the analysis, this certainly made me pause and think about whether we got this right. Now, I realized that at first sight, it would seem that the proposed agenda decision is consistent with example two in paragraph 73, at least the first part of that example. However, I'm not convinced it's necessarily consistent with other parts of IS 19. I continue to think that too much weight is given in the analysis on the first part of example two of paragraph 73, and too little weight is given on other relevant parts of IS 19. In particular, I share the concerns of some respondents that the proposed agenda decision may not be fully consistent with the overall principle in paragraph 70, and also that there may be an inconsistency with the second part of example 2 in paragraph 73. Let me maybe explain why I have these concerns. So first, paragraph 32 of the staff paper states that the requirements in paragraph 70 changes only the pattern of attribution of benefits and does not change the periods over which an entity attributes services. Attributes benefits. Now, it's not clear to me why this is the case. I think there's a principle in paragraph 70, which is aiming to avoid backloading of personal expense. And I'm not sure why this would not be relevant when determining the periods over which an entity attributes services, especially if the condition to be entitled to benefits is relating to future employment. And second, I would like to talk a bit more about the example 2 in paragraph 73. That example talks about benefits that are paid at the age of 65, regardless of the length of employee services, where the only condition for an employee joining at the age of 55 to receive the employee benefits would be to be employed at the age of 65. And so, you know, as noted in some of the comment letters, the employee could leave at, say, 57 and return at 60 and still receive the same benefit. They could also leave at 56 and return at the age of 64 and still receive the same benefit. However, that last part of example 2 indicates that the expense should nonetheless be spread over the entire 10-year service period. So any backloading would not be appropriate in that fact pattern. Now, you know, some would view the first part of example 2 as being more closely aligned with the fact pattern. But then, nonetheless, I do worry that the agenda decision as drafted may be inconsistent with that last part of example 2. So I can certainly understand why people have read the requirements in IS 19 in a different way. And I continue to think that, you know, the requirements in IS 19 are not entirely clear in this regard, and that there may be more than one way to read those requirements. So for those reasons, I'm still in the same place as in the December meeting. I would be more inclined to support standard setting, for example, by way of an annual improvement to resolve the matter. Thank you.
Thanks, Carsten. Mary, did you want to comment specifically on something Carsten said?
Yes, please. I have a couple of other thoughts, but I think I'll hold those for a different comment. Carsten, looking at paragraph 70 of IS 19, I think the reason I supported the staff statement about it doesn't affect the period, it doesn't affect when you start and when you stop recognizing benefits, it only affects the pattern of recognition, is because 70A and 70B are absolute in terms of what the start date and the end date are. It's the question that 70, the intro, the preamble in 70 tees up is within this period that's defined, do you attribute it on a straight line or on another basis? So I think 70A focuses us on service from the employee, and as does and 70B on no further benefits being earned. And I emphasized service in 70A to distinguish it from something that I think is relevant in the fact pattern submitted, which is kind of the clock ticking down to when you get to, in our example, age 46 and can start providing qualifying service. Because the other years do count you down to starting your 16-year clock, but the service you provide in that period does not meet the service described in 70A. So I think the staff's assertion about what 70A does and does not tell us is correct about being absolute about the period. Sorry, that wasn't as clear as it was in my mind, what I said, but I hope it helps.
Thanks, Mary. Jens?
Thank you, Sue. I only like to comment on question one, and I think I can come back in when we discuss question two. So with regard to question one, I fully agree with the analysis of the staff that the 15-year condition does not change the analysis we had in our tentative agenda decision. And this is why, because of the 15-year condition, as far as I understood it, is just an employment condition. So there must be 15 years of employment and not by a specific employer. This might be something else when it is specific for one employer, but it's just a condition that requires that there is a working life of 15 years, and therefore I don't think that this, and I believe this condition does not change our tentative agenda decision. And for question two, I think the overall going forward discussion, I'm happy to chime in again when we come to question two.
Thanks, Yang. Yang-Soo.
Thank you. I think what we are doing is to make a decision based on the given fact pattern. So based on the given fact pattern, I think the 15-year condition does not change our conclusion. In the fact pattern, the employee has to work for 16 years consecutively before the retirement age, and 16 years is longer than 15 years. So no matter where he worked before, no matter how long he has worked before, you know, it doesn't affect any of our decisions at all. So I fully support the analysis of the staff on the 15-year condition. And as for the second question, question number two, I just want to make a short comment because several people says about the underlying principles of IAS 19. And what I think is the underlying principle of IAS 19 is that company has to recognize liability when the company has an obligation. And I think the staff has done a wonderful job in defining when the company's obligation starts. And that time is when the employee becomes the age of 46. So in that sense, I also agree with the staff analysis for question number two. So overall, I should say I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Yang-Soo. Lisa.
Thanks, Sue. Actually, I would completely agree with Yang-Soo what he just said and how I would view it the same on question one and question two. I think, specifically, I guess, just focusing on question one at the moment, the key to me is that you need to be able to look and assess based on the fact pattern when the employee is eligible for the benefit. Until such time that employee is eligible to earn such a benefit, it wouldn't be until then that you would actually start accruing the expense. So, in the fact pattern, adding the 15-year condition doesn't impact the conclusion that we reached in that tentative decision. But, for any reason, if there were different facts that you'd have to take into account, I just think the basics is that you just need to take all the facts, assess when the employee becomes eligible at that point in time, and that is when you'd actually start accruing the expense. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. John?
Yes, thank you, Sue. I think Yang-Soo, I echo. I think Yang-Soo's comments were spot on, so I don't have a lot to add because I think they were well said, and I fully agree with his comments. I agree with the staff analysis regarding the 15-year period. I don't think it changes the outcome here, and I also think, even though I can see conceptually how others might want to get to a different outcome, when I look at IAS 19 and the examples contained within, including example two within paragraph three, I think the staff's analysis is perfectly accurate and it is consistent with what the standard would result in. Intuitively, if I didn't have a standard in front of me, might I reach a different outcome? Yes, but when I look at the words on the standards and the example within the standard, I find the analysis to be perfectly consistent with example two. I don't see a contradiction. So I agree with the outcome and the analysis and support it.
Thanks, John. Renata.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Sue. I would tend to agree with Bertrand. I believe the
obligation arises since the very first day of the employee's services. I don't want to be repetitive and reading all the paragraphs, but I would be supported by paragraph 70 and 72. In my opinion, it's appropriate to allocate the service costs since the very first day. And one thing that I read and I'd like to share is that one of the big fours, I believe it was Deloitte, they pointed that it's necessary to have just one criteria to avoid diversity in practice, considering time services provided not only specific period of service. I'm concerned about fomenting the diversity in practice when we go to analyzing paragraph 72 isolated. So I would agree with Bertrand's conclusions. And I also believe that the actuarial valuations would allow companies to estimate correct impacts throughout the period of the services. So we do have tools to allow us to make the correct appointments in the balance sheet, regardless of the period of vesting that would start in the from the last 16 years of service. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Natasha.
Thanks, Sue. I agree with the staff on the new term. I think the 15 years is a binary gating condition and doesn't really change the analysis. I think Mary was getting at this. I think the root issue that we're dealing with here is around paragraph 70A. It's when do you start, when does the employee start to attaining those benefits. I think the example for paragraph 73 is right on. Second part of it, I think contradicts that. It is confusing. I would agree it needs to be clarified, but it doesn't say you start at some time earlier than the age of 35 attaining those benefits. Example that I thought was directly on point, which is example 2 to paragraph 72, which says if you exclude employees only attain benefits after the age of 25. I mean, in our example in the submission is you don't attain benefits until you reach the age of 46. So I thought those are directly on point.
Thanks, Bob. Marie.
Yes, thanks. We do agree with the staff analysis on the new condition and on the fact pattern, but as there was a different way to read that at that moment, and I think the standard is not read this way at the moment. We think that it might not be so clear, and regarding also the comment letter received, and namely on paragraph 70 and example 2, we think that it might be better to have an annual improvement just to clarify things instead of an agenda decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Goro.
Hi, thank you. I agree with staff's analysis that this 15-year additional condition will not change our analysis and conclusion. And I think that the summary by Yan Su was well said. And I also share that the view that referring this new fact pattern in the agenda decision would rather likely be a source of confusion. So that I support that to finalize that the agenda decision as proposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Goro. Guy?
Thanks, Sue. I missed part of the early comments there. I was having some internet connection issues, so my apologies for that. But I think just on the 15-year question, I don't think that changes the answer that has come to in the tentative agenda decision. And I won't repeat at least some of the latter parts of the conversation that I've heard in support of that. But my comment at this point is limited to that question. I do want to come back in when we come to question two. But again, I don't think the 15-year condition in and of itself would alter the answer based on the framework we've set out in the agenda decision.
Okay. So we're ready now, I think, to move on to question two. From the staff side, did you want to say anything before we open that discussion, or can I invite Guy to continue with his comments on question two?
I think Guy can probably go ahead.
Yep. Guy, would you like to keep going?
Sure, thanks, Sue. So maybe just with regard to the overall framework, and the analysis in the paper, I was left with the impression a bit that the analysis in the paper can be read as very form-driven or rules-based. In particular, in paragraph 39B and C of the paper, it almost reads like, well, if you can find a date in the plan, use that date. If you can't, default to when the employee first commences providing service. If I focus on the first part of example two to paragraph 73 in IAS 19, the 20-year condition in that, you know, one might like to view that more as a vesting condition, as something that specifies when benefits or when service first gives rise to benefits under the plan. But the example very clearly makes a different assessment of that. I don't think that means, you know, it's always just a form or rules driven exercise. I don't think if we substituted 20 years for any other number, we would default to that. So if it rather than 20 years, it said 1 or 2 years or something like that, I don't think I would automatically default to that same sort of rules-based or form-driven answer. So I think there is judgment that needs to be applied here. I appreciate that at least in the first part of example two, it doesn't convey a judgment, but the examples similarly are limited, and we don't illustrate in the standard a host of other examples that might help to convey some of the judgments that may be necessary in assessing when service first gives rise to benefits under the plan. So again, I don't think people should be reading this agenda decision as being strictly a form or rules driven exercise. There's some scope for judgment here in assessing specific arrangements, and without some room for judgment, there could be some very troubling outcomes, I think, that could emerge. Having said all of that, though, I still find the analysis in this particular fact pattern not to be unreasonable. Arguably the facts in our agenda decision, perhaps more clearly lead to a conclusion that service first gives rise to benefits under the plan starting from age 46, as compared even to the example two in paragraph 73 of IAS 19. But again, I think it's important that it be understood that this is really just an analysis of this particular fact pattern, and again, isn't trying to imply, a form or rules driven exercise to other fact patterns. And when I look at the facts that we spelt out in the agenda decision, I can't really find another fact in that agenda decision that would drive me to an answer that's different from age 46. If we had other facts in the fact pattern that I could point to that may, help me make a different judgment, then so be it. But based on the fact pattern that's spelled out there, I'm not sure what to point to suggest anything other than age 46. But maybe lastly, I think in some of the back and forth that seems to have occurred with the submitter of this issue, and also some of the comments that have come through some of the comment letters, it sounds like there's perhaps some remaining controversy over, you know, whether or not we've captured all the relevant facts in this fact pattern. And if so, you know, one does pause and wonder whether our agenda decision, you know, is going to be viewed as really responding to the specific fact pattern that underlies the submission. If some still continue to believe that there are other relevant facts at play that, you know, don't appear in the fact pattern in our agenda decision. But having said all of that, based on the facts that we spelt out in the agenda decision, I can't really find another fact in there to drive an answer that's different than H46 as the start date for attributing benefits.
Thank you, Guy. I just might provide a comment on the last point that Guy touched on there. Just, you know, my view for people to perhaps comment on when they come in. I think as a committee, we try to be careful not to get into situations that are too fact specific, because our job isn't really to come up with an agenda decision that addresses, you know, that somebody can take to the auditor and know what the accounting is for their particular fact pattern, to use an extreme articulation. And I think there has been, you know, some more input and discussion about the exact fact pattern that the submitter had in mind. But it seemed to me, looking at this paper and the comment letters and also the draft agenda decision, that we're trying to help people get a more consistent understanding of how particular requirements in IAS 19 work. We're not trying to say, you know, for this submitter, what's the answer to your particular accounting question per se. It's trying to assist consistent application, because the question that was submitted shows us an area where people might need some help, you know, connecting the dots in IAS 19. And I think for me, as long as we think that the agenda decision is helpful in achieving that, the fact that it doesn't, you know, include every aspect of a particular fact pattern in itself would not, for me, result in me being unhappy about finalising the agenda decision as a reason in itself. That's my view, for what it's worth. Others might, of course, want to comment on that. Anyway, with that, John, I think you are next.
Thanks, Sue. I appreciate your comments, because I actually had a similar, concern when the additional fact pattern was added for the 15-year period, because I suddenly felt that this was now becoming a very specific accounting question on a specific plan, and that I find, you know, obviously we may or may not know all the facts. We only know the facts that are submitted in the question. So I think that, you know, I think we have to be careful not to be, you know, too specific in the fact pattern here. And I think also you see that a little bit in the comments that are coming from constituents regarding, you know, what if they have a habit of paying this even though you haven't achieved the threshold, or what if you add this fact pattern or that fact pattern? And so it gives me some concern about the agenda decision and issuing it, because I think inherently benefit plans are very company specific and very country specific or jurisdiction specific. And it's difficult to have a very simplified fact pattern, because I think in the real world, at least in what I've seen, it's not so simple. And either in terms of the legality or the requirements within a particular jurisdiction, or in terms of how the constructive benefits and obligations that a company might establish because of its own behavior. So I think, you know, from my standpoint, I think the analysis based on the facts in the paper, I think are good. As to whether it's helpful, I have a question on that, because it is rather simple on a topic which is inherently not simple. So I did wrestle with it. But with that said, as long as constituents don't take this agenda decision and apply it broadly in fact patterns that are dissimilar from those that are articulated in the agenda decision, perhaps it could be helpful in elaborating on the requirements of paragraphs 70 to 74. And I think in that regard, I'm supportive, but I do have a pause. I do have a hesitation, because I do worry that it could be applied in circumstances that are dissimilar from the fact pattern. So on balance, I'm supportive, but it's with reservation.
Thanks, John. Brian.
Thanks, Sue. Having disagreed on question one and found myself in something of a minority, I just wanted to clarify that I absolutely agree with the staff recommendation to finalise the agenda decision based on the summarised fact pattern presented in the agenda decision. I cannot put a bit of paper between that summarised fact pattern and the first part of exam two, and I think that paragraph 39 of the staff paper does a good job of dealing with the concerns about the second part of example two. I think it's important to remember that example two isn't an illustrative example, it's a mandatory bit of the standard. As I said earlier, we might have, there might be some lack of clarity about how to apply the principles, but the first part of example two illustrates one way to apply the principles and seems to me to be entirely consistent with what has gone before. And it's an interesting point about should we finalise an agenda decision when we know that real life is more complicated. I guess I would say that real life is always more complicated, and I think as long as the agenda decision sets out the relevant facts on which the conclusion is based, then I think we should go ahead. There's a risk of saying, well, every defined benefit plan is always so complicated that we can't capture every aspect of it in an agenda decision. I think what we have to do in order to move forward is to synthesize, to extract key facts on which we're commenting, and as long as those are clear in the agenda decision, I think we should go ahead if we believe that the conclusion reflects that summary version of the facts in the agenda decision. So on question two, I'm in agreement with the staff and I would like to finalise this agenda decision.
Thanks, Brian. Sophie.
Yes, just based on the first part of example two, I agree with the proposed agenda decision. But as you said, we should assist in order to have consistent application of the standard. And I am concerned by the second part of example two, where the only condition for an employee to receive the benefit is to be still employed at the age of 65, regardless the length of service. And I believe that this submission highlights that some inconsistencies exist in the application of paragraph 70 to 74 of IS 19. And for this reason, even if I will support the agenda decision, I would recommend to report to the board of possible inconsistencies, such as reported by some respondents to the tentative agenda decision. Indeed, in the two parts of the examples, if the employee leaves the entity, no benefit will be provided to them. In both cases, if the employees are still in the entity at the fixed age, they will receive 2,000 euro, or I don't know which currency. So I cannot find the underlying principles in paragraph 70 to 74 of IS 19 that explain that the treatment is different between these two cases. And if we apply the reasoning that was applied to the first part of the example, I would then say that finally we should recognize the whole obligation in the second part of the example at the age of 65, and not based on what is written in the example. So to conclude, I am quite confused by the possible contradiction in the standard in these two parts of the example, and I do not see how paragraph 70 to 74 apply consistently to these two cases. And so it's why I would recommend, in addition to the final decision, to make a report to the board of these possible inconsistencies in this illustrative example of paragraph 33.
Thank you, Sophie. Bob.
Thanks, Sue. I agree with the staff's analysis and think we should finalize the agenda decision. As I said before, I think what this issue is really getting at is the application of paragraph. If the submission came in as the plan says that years before the age of 46 are excluded from leading to benefit, I think we all would know how to apply that one and say, well, you start attributing benefit after from the age of 46 on and not before. I think what this agenda decision is effectively helping people understand is that when you have a minimum age and a cap on service, it is the same as, economically the same as saying, hey, you only start attaining benefit, leading to benefit from a minimum age. And so you should get the same answer. So that's why I am in agreement with finalizing the agenda decision. I think it's helpful in that respect. I do agree with others in that we should inform the board that we think there are other aspects of paragraph 73 example two that I don't think contradict the agenda decision and the conclusions that I think we should reach, but that they aren't clear and that in a technical amendment they should be clarified.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Ian.
I agree with staff, and this is with regard to question two, and I do think we should finalize the agenda decision. I do have some minor comments and wording, but I don't have any other buts. For me, there is no buts. We should finalize the agenda decision. There are no buts.
Thanks, Jens. Bertrand?
Yeah, on this, once again, as I said previously, I think the principles of IS-19 contained in paragraphs 70 to 74 are not that clear. There's always a tension between recognition and measurement principles. There is always a tension between acquisition of benefits and service periods. And service period is not necessarily similar to service costs, so to the expensing of pension liability. If there had not been example two of paragraph 73, I'm not sure we would have answered, or the staff would have answered so easily the question raised by the fact pattern. And last, I think there might be unintended consequences that depart from the strict fact pattern that was discussed in the two agenda papers relating to this issue. And once again, I'm not that convinced that a proper answer would be a deferral of expense or liabilities, because ultimately, as an outcome, it is what we conclude as a committee. And honestly, as a preparer, it's rather shocking to reach such a conclusion. I would rather go not to finalize the agenda decision and go for standard setting on this one.
Mary, did you want to add a comment or two?
I would a couple of thoughts listening to this discussion. And one goes back to the hesitation that John expressed about the usefulness of the specified fact pattern when plans are all so different and have much more complication. I just earlier today it struck me, and I suggested to the staff that we look to make that they think about a minor wording amendment to actually just refer to accounting for the benefit rather than accounting for the plan, so that people don't kind of overread that this agenda decision would be determinative for the plan as a whole if plans included other features as well. Because really what this agenda decision is focusing in on is, if you have these terms, how do you account for these terms as a, you know, potentially a component of a plan? I think the, you know, as you guys said in your consideration of, does the 15-year condition change it, it doesn't, because as explained, the terms of the 15-year explain, it is not an alternative route to earning benefits. It's just, as Bob Yule said, a gatekeeping, a further gate, a further hurdle that has to be crossed. But the more general comment that I was reminded of as I looked through, especially the comment letters on this one, is that when you're counting for employee benefits, you have to consider the substantive terms of the plan. And if the substantive terms are limited as they are specified in the fact pattern, then personally, I'm supportive of the staff analysis that says this is, you know, this is the way that you read those. I think some of the hesitation that may be bleeding through in some of the comment letters are questions about whether the example, the terms set out in the example are fully the substantive plans. And I think you'll go down a rabbit hole that the committee will never emerge from if you try to start assessing all of what is and what is not substantive in different legal settings and different additional conditions. So I think what I've heard members say is sensible in terms of focusing on the specified conditions that are set out in the agenda decision, and with the assumption that those are the substantive terms, how would you account for at least those benefits? And that gives somebody who's analyzing a plan with additional terms an anchor for that piece, and then can start saying, well, if this also happens, then does that change the analysis? And that kind of goes back to the judgment that Guy was talking about. So a little philosophizing about IS 19. Thank you.
IS 19 philosophy, what next? Okay, Carsten?
Yeah, I just quickly wanted to support what Sophie and Bob have said around, you know, reporting this to the board, the potential inconsistency. I also thought was what Mary just said was really interesting to me around, you know, the substantive terms. I guess assessing whether or not the term is substantive. I think that's particularly interesting if you look at the examples in example two of paragraph 73. Because in the second example, I think there's a question about whether or not there's a benefit formula in that example. Seems the analysis is focusing and essentially saying that, you know, there isn't really a benefit formula in the second part of that example. But I was actually wondering whether there is a benefit formula in that example, because it just says regardless of the length of service, right? So it seems to me like the only condition is employment at the age of 65. You know, and so a literal reading of this would mean, as someone else has pointed out earlier, that service by the employee would first lead to benefits under the plan when the employee turns 65. So using that logic, I think the date when services first leads to benefits would be when the employee turns 65, which would also be the date when the attribution period ends, right? So essentially you would have a single day that you would attribute all of the expense to, which, you know, is not what example two says. And that's why I thought, you know, the comment from Mary around, you know, substantive terms is maybe quite important in this regard.
Okay, thank you, Carsten. Young Su, and then I think we'll be ready to vote.
Okay, I'd like to make a very quick comment. I mean, Mary and John talked about the usefulness of the fact pattern. And I agree with them in a sense that I've never seen any fact pattern like this in my life. As far as I know, this fact pattern doesn't exist in Korea. But still, I think this fact pattern and the agenda decision help people, because this agenda decision and this fact pattern tells us the underlying principle of IAS 19. As I said, company has to recognize liability when company has the obligation, not before that, but after that. So I think when I read the fact pattern and the agenda decision, what brings to me was that this principle was clearly explained in the agenda decision. So I think even if this fact pattern is not popular, this, you know, the agenda decision and the fact pattern will help people understand what is IAS 19. Thank you.
Thank you, Yongsu. With that, can I get a show of hands? Would support finalizing the agenda decision, and then I'll see whether there's any wording suggestions. And question two.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I'm seeing 9 on screen.
And 1.
4. Yeah. So that's 10.
Okay. So that's enough votes. Does anybody have any additional comments they want to make around the wording and the agenda decision? Jens?
Thank you, Sue. On page 21, there are two amendments in the last paragraph dealing with or referencing to the first part of example 2, and then there is a term in brackets. I don't think that we need either of these amendments, and I would support to delete these amendments, or if we want to make the reference to example 2 in paragraph 73, we should quote what we really want to say rather than put in brackets it asked for employees who join before the age of 35. So if we think it's relevant, the first part of example 2, then we should quote what we think is relevant for our agenda rather than, because I think it's not clear right now what is meant by first part of example 2. I had a hard time guessing what is the end of the first part. So if we want a little bit clearer, then we can quote the part of example 2 that we really want to quote to. And this is what was one comment, and the second one is on, I do think it would be helpful for our agenda decision if we reference directly to paragraph 70A and highlighting that 70A is the starting point in attributing benefits. Now, I think now we have on page 19, we only reference to paragraph 70 as a whole. But if we could, in a short statement on what is the reasoning for, or what is the meaning of 70A, this would provide more clarity to our conclusion. These are my two comments on wording.
Thank you, Jens. Brian?
Thank you. Just a very minor comment on page 19. In the description of the fact pattern and the four bullets labelled A, B, C, D, I think it's quite helpful in the fact pattern that in a few places we've added the words with the entity to emphasise that we're talking about consecutive periods of service. I wonder if we should also do that in the description of part D of the fact pattern, i.e. so that it would read only the number of consecutive years of employee service with the entity. I don't think that's 100% necessary given the amendment to B, but I think it would be useful just given the conversation we've had about cumulative and consecutive conditions. So I'd just like to add the words with the entity to part D on page 19.
Okay, Bob?
Yeah, just a quick comment. One of the important paragraphs to me was paragraph 70A, which tells me when to start. And I thought we should refer to that. We talk about on the top of the second page of the agenda decision that you know, we describe how it starts at the age of 46 attained benefit, but I thought tying that to the actual, to a paragraph would be helpful.
Okay, thank you. Petrita, do you want to comment on the wording suggestions, and then I'll get a show of hands confirming the exact agenda decision we're voting on?
Sure. So what I've got is on page 19, Brian's suggestion that at least I think would be a helpful one is in bullet D to add with the entity immediately after employee service. So it would read consecutive years of employee service with the entity immediately before the retirement age. That would be consistent with the other changes. I've heard Jens and Bob just potentially ask us to maybe quote or tie a bit more directly to paragraph 70, and in particular maybe what's said in paragraph 70A that sort of talks about the date when service first leads to benefits under the plan, because I think you rightly note that some of the changed wording that we propose page 20 kind of ties into that wording by talking about when service first leads to benefits. If you leave that with us to work out how best we'll do that, the only reason I'm pausing on that is I understand what you're saying, and I think it would be helpful if we can do it. It's just that the way paragraph 70 is written, that A is sort of written under a sort of an intro sentence that's not our fact pattern, although I do agree with you that it's relevant. So maybe if you leave that with us to say that we'll try to do that if we think we can do it in a way that lines up with IS 19 appropriate. And then the last suggestion was Jens over at the top of page 21. I don't know whether it's just preference. I suppose when we obviously prepared this, we thought, given the comments, that it perhaps wasn't specific enough just to have this say the outcome set out in example two, that we did need to highlight that we were talking specifically about the first part of example two. And then to try and make it clear, we put in those words in IE so that people would know which paragraph of that example to specifically look at. I think Jens is suggesting he doesn't think that's needed, or he'd almost go one way or the other. He'd take it out completely, or otherwise, if we think it's needed, he would rather more holistically quote perhaps that full paragraph from the example, the paragraph that begins for employees who joined before the age of 35. I don't know that I have a strong preference on that. I probably still lean towards either keeping what we have or otherwise spelling out, adding a quote from example two so that it is clear which part of example two we're talking about.
I think it mattered to some people which piece of example two was being referred to. So my suggestion is we vote on at least having these words here and maybe see if you can make it even more clear which bit that we're referring to.
That's all right.
With those suggestions, can I get maybe it's easier to count if anybody who supported the agenda decision has a problem with any of those changes, could you please put up your hand? Otherwise, I'll assume that you're okay with it. Anybody got a problem with those suggestions? No, Brian, you okay?
So yeah, I'm okay with that suggestion.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much. And a few of you made comments about potential areas of, sort of complexity in the drafting in IAS 19 that you suggested be reported to the board. So we'll take that recommendation and make sure the board is aware of those comments as well. All right, well done, everybody. Okay, so now we're going to change topic and move on to agenda paper 3, current, non-current. So I'm handing over to Gustavo. Whenever you're ready, Gustavo. Gustavo, can't hear you. Are you speaking? Got a communication breakdown at just the wrong moment. We can't wait to hear you, Gustavo.
Do we want to give Gustavo a bit more? Oh, I can now see Gustavo. Gustavo, are you able to?
Well, Gustavo is there. We just can't hear him.
Okay.
He's been there throughout.
Okay.
Let's put him under a little bit more pressure so he can feel it, you know, and trying to get his computer to work.
Yeah, I know. No pressure, Gustavo. Why don't we have a 5-minute break and give Gustavo time to disconnect and reconnect? So just a few minutes, come back in 5 minutes.